ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 50.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins. It's a current of love, a chorus of pain.
Today, we bring you our interview with Buffalo Bisons pitcher David Aardsma. Sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Welcome back to a new season of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. We're brought to you by the 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook and the premium content section of Blue Jays From Away. This year's edition features profiles of over 200 players in the Toronto Blue Jays organization, while giving you all of the info you need to follow the Blue Jays minor leaguers in action. The premium content section has photos, video, and scouting reports to supplement the profiles. The 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook and the Blue Jays From Away premium content section. We've got you covered. And now our interview with David Aardsma.
I'm joined by David Aardsma of the Toronto Blue Jays. Welcome to the podcast, David.
No, thank you for having me on.
So the first thing I want to ask you about is a little bit off the beaten path. I've noticed that you have a pretty incredible Twitter game going on. How long have you been tweeting, and since when have you sort of used that special sense of humor to entertain your fans?
I started tweeting 2011. That's when it was kind of going around Seattle Clubhouse. I wish I would have done it in 09 or 10, whenever, you know, back when I was closing, and I would have had a lot more followers. You try to have fun with it. I feel like I've always had a decent sense of humor, and try to relay that into Twitter somehow and have fun without offending people, which is very hard to do on Twitter. Just trying to have fun with things, try to see the lighter side of stuff, and the lighter side of especially being a bullpen pitcher in big leagues where you get looked over a lot, and now becoming a little veteran, you definitely get overlooked, and so try to bring that and that kind of fun to my Twitter.
So I noticed especially the one recently that you tweeted about how come Sports Illustrated doesn't do a cover story on middle relievers.
Seriously, you know. I mean, that's not right. It's not right.
So you think there should be more cover stories and Sports Illustrated covers for like utility infielders and middle relievers?
Without a doubt. I mean, we already know. We know about, all these guys already. We know, that every single little thing you can learn about Kershaw. We know it. You know, he's a stud. I mean, don't take anything away from what he's doing, man. He's a stud. Well, let's find out a little bit more about the guys that you just never hear about, let's enjoy that a little bit. They should dedicate one every year to that 25th guy on the roster, or in basketball, whatever it is, the 13th guy, or those last guys that complete teams that need them to come up big in that one big huge situation, and they do. A lot of times they make or break teams, and I've been on some really bad teams, been on some really good teams, and it's definitely those last couple guys that make the big difference.
Well, I've noticed that especially in the playoffs, that's when those guys really get their due, because more often than not, they're the ones, I mean, unless you're the Blue Jays and it's Jose Bautista doing it all the time, but they're the ones who seem to come up with that big hit. And Pat Borders, I think, was a World Series MVP one year. And, guys like Ed Sprague and guys that you don't expect to hear from, they're the guys who make that one play when the game's on the line that can really make a difference, especially in the playoffs.
Well, you think about, like Dave Roberts, to the Red Sox, what he means to the Red Sox and winning in 2004 by stealing a base. With two outs and he steals that base, the rally gets started, and all of a sudden they win the World Series. Those last guys, those guys that get overlooked a lot, end up, coming up in the biggest moment, and the teams that fail, a lot of times those guys come up in that big moment and fail. you know, that's when they need that last guy to step up. And it's, you know, you can't have a weak link in any of your chains when you're trying to win the World Series. And so a lot of times they always focus on Batista and Encarnacion or you know, or Stroman. Those guys are studs, man. They're amazing. But, you know, with this, those last guys that sometimes win or lose World Series rings.
Now, you've had a long career. Obviously, you've been around the game. And what kind of perspective do you think that brings you? And especially when you're, you know, starting the year in Buffalo, I guess. And, you know, what can you bring to the team and what can you bring to the other players and your teammates in that role with so much experience?
Man, that's a big question. But, you know, what you try to do is you try to come in, especially, you know, being around 14th different organization, maybe my 14th year, I don't know, I lost count. But what I bring is, I feel consistency, pedigree. I've kind of been there, kind of done that, you know, seen the good side, the bad side, everywhere in between. I was never a person that had a whole lot of talent. I feel like my hard work, my dedication, routine, has really allowed me to excel, you know, in baseball and excel in my role. So a lot of things what I try to bring, especially down here right now, and, you know, in the minor league camp, is to talk to young guys, let them see what it takes to be a big leaguer. I got to big leagues extremely fast, but found out really quickly it's a lot harder to stay. Staying in the big leagues is a lot harder than getting there, and a lot of these guys don't quite understand what it takes, one, to even get there, but they have an idea what it takes to get there, but they don't know what it is to be there. They don't know what it is to be a big leaguer. And so I try to express, you know, today, you know, I was talking to probably four or five guys that were just watching me do my work, my everyday work, and, you know, they were kind of watching like, what are you doing? You know, like no, man, this should be every day for you. This should be normal. This should be your routine. Work on your mechanics every single day. You don't just show up and throw and hope for the best. No, man, it's got to become ingrained. And so you try to convey that to younger players. Let them see that. Let them know what it takes to be a big leaguer. And instead of just watching guys like a Stroman or a Estrada and just be and seeing the talent and going, oh, wow, I wish I could do that. Well, no. Those guys didn't just wake up and do that. They worked their butt off every day to be able to do that. And then they make that a routine every day. So every time they step on the mound, man, they're the best they can possibly be. And it's not just a flip of the coin. So try to show that. And then at the same time, you know, lock down some innings, man. I want to get back to the big leagues. As good as it is to be here and unfortunately starting in Buffalo, it is also an opportunity that with a new organization and to show them what I have. And I want to go out there and do my thing, man, and lock down some innings and show them I should be in the big leagues.
Now, you made the big leagues for the first time, I think, in 2004. And that was with Baltimore?
No, San Francisco.
San Francisco. And, you know, you mentioned that it's hard to stay in the big leagues. You know, what did you learn in those first year, first month, first, you know, first crack at it that told you it was more than just about getting there?
You know, so when I got up and the old adage, you know, okay, back in my day, there were a lot of veterans. I was the only rookie on the entire team. And there was a ton of veterans. I mean, that's what the big leagues were. It was veterans. And, you know, a young player coming up, yeah, there was one or two on a team, but that was it. There was no 20-year-olds in the big leagues. So when I came up, it was all salty veterans that had been there, done that. They were all, you know, almost the entire team, San Francisco, was all-stars. Extremely talented team. And so you watch them, you watch every day what they do, man. And these guys, how they prepare and how they get ready and what they do to be the best in the world, you know, it grows on you and you see that. And like Marquise Grissom and every day making me work out with him every single day to be like, hey, man, you don't get to the big leagues. Yeah, you get there on talent, but you don't stay here on talent. You stay here on hard work and routine and preparation. I saw that, and that's sank in, man. It took me a little bit, you know. Took me a little bit to get, you know, hard-headed, you know, because I got the greatest arm in the world. You know, of course I'm going to be a big leaguer forever. You know, you sit down a couple weeks later, and you're, realize really quickly that, yeah, man, I have the talent to be there, but I didn't have the work ethic yet to really be there. And, you know, over time that definitely developed, and now I take pride in it.
Now, when did you feel like you really belonged? I've heard from players that, you know, sometimes they get there and it's a little bit of, you know, the stars are in their eyes a little bit, and, yeah, and things go by real quick, and some of it may, you know, go a little bit over their head. But I think every player gets to the point where they realize that they belong there. And when was that for you?
Well, I think there's two times for me. I think there's a time where you realize you have the talent to, you know, you can get anybody out. And that probably happened probably in 2006 with the Cubs, where I realized, hey, man, I got this stuff and I can do this. And then probably, you know, 2007 was a little tough year for me. And then 2008 was where I can excel here. You know, unfortunately in 2008, I had a pretty bad groin injury that really messed my season up right after the All-Star break. I think I had like a 10 ERA after the All-Star break in like six innings, and a 2.5 ERA in like 30 innings before the All-Star break. And so that was that time where I finally like it kind of grasped, man, I can do that. Not only just be here and get someone out, I can excel. And so it was probably, you know, a good 4 years, you know, before I really knew, man, hey, I'm going to take this and run.
Now, is that, you know, was that sort of also a point where you realized just how much your body is important to you as a, you know, a big league athlete, when, you know, you weren't 100%, things didn't go very well, but when you were, obviously you were having a great season at that point. Is that, you know, a point where you realize that even just, you know, something that you think you might be able to pitch through may not be the wisest thing?
No, absolutely. Well, it's hard. You know, you have that mindset, especially as a reliever, especially around that, you know, that time where you didn't take yourself off the field. You know, the coaches had to take you off, and I was going to grind it out and battle, and I never had an injury before in my career. So I didn't know, groin pull, I thought I could just stretch it out. You know, stretch it, heat pack it, ice it at night, and you're good. I didn't realize that's probably the opposite you want to do. You want to stop stretching it, and you'll get completely just let it heal. So I was stretching the heck out of it and hurting myself more and more and more every single day. But, you know, unfortunately, yeah, I look back and go, I wish I would have done it differently. But what happened also led me to 2009, where I, you know, almost an all-star and had, you know, career season. So I knew 2008, I knew the next year was coming. Just a matter of whether I was going to stay healthy or not. I knew I was hitting my stride. But it was hard. It's hard to tell yourself no. It's hard to tell yourself pull back. Nowadays it's a lot different. You got trainers all over you. You got people watching you constantly. So many biomechanics, so much analytics where any little thing changes, someone's in your ear or someone's pulling you off the field. Back then it was a little different, you know. You pitch until you can, and I don't know, I saw that mindset. You pitch until they tell you you can't.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, the time when you were pitching and you're in the big leagues, obviously that's the goal, to get back there again and to be able to do that again. And you know, the last few years it's been a little up and down, I guess. And so what are you doing? Is there anything different about what you're doing, or it's just, you know, getting a shot?
Well, I think last year was so 2012 or 2013, I pitched all right. I was coming back from Tommy John. Coming back from hip surgery is really a lot more major for me than Tommy John. And I was all right. I wasn't quite myself. You know, I hit my stride towards the end of the year. You know, it took me a little while. I felt like I did all right. 2014, just not myself. Stopped using my legs. Actually tore my groin. So I had surgery on that at the end of the year. Last year, I actually felt really positive about my season. I started in the minors, pitched extremely well in spring training, pitched extremely well in AAA, got my chance in the big leagues, and I actually had statistically one of my best seasons ever. Problem is, everyone looks at ERA. It was two outings. Take away two appearances, and my ERA is, I think, down in the twos. So outside of two fluke innings, I feel like I had an extremely, extremely, extremely successful year. Best strikeout to walk ratio I've ever had. Best strikeout per nine ratio I've ever had. Best batting average I ever had against right-handed hitters. on the same time, worst season I've ever had against lefties. So I know going into this year, I extremely needed to work on a changeup to left-hand hitters. My split just wasn't working anymore. I couldn't throw a first strike. Couldn't throw it consistently with confidence. So I needed something different, different look to a left-hand hitter. Really worked hard, and it's worked out extremely well as spring training, extremely well so far down here. So I know if I even have an average year against lefties and I do the same fan day against righties, I'm going to be having a great year. I mean, an excellent year. And so I know I look back at my year, right? Last year wasn't good. I don't think it tells even remotely the story of how my season went. Kind of the same way I look at 2008 for me. ERA was really bad. It was a makeup of six innings on my second half when I tried to pitch hurt, you know, tried to make a playoff roster. And so this year I look at, man, if I just do what I did last year with, you know, with a little bit better, because I've obviously worked up my pitches, it's going to be a heck of a year. And I truly believe that, because I know the hard work, preparation, and I'll be ready.
Now, that sort of brings you into this year. Obviously, you feel good, I guess, and everything's going well. And was the choice of team when you signed with the Blue Jays, does the fact that that they're, you know, gunning for a championship, they're trying to get back to the playoffs, and they've already got, you know, a lot of talent on the major league team, you know, would you almost look for a different team to catch on with, maybe that needed more help at the big league squad? Or are you just looking to play with as good a team as you can and be able to contribute any way you can?
Well, there's different ways to look at it. And so yes, you can take a team that's probably not going to be successful. I mean, who knows how it all works out. But you take a team that's probably not going to be successful, yes, you might have a better chance to make the team, but at the same time, you might not. Because a lot of times those teams want the younger talent, and if they're not going to win, they're not going to spend money in the bullpen, and they're going to give their younger talent a chance to either succeed or fail. You know, on the flip side, you take a team like this, a lot of talent, but they need to win. You know, it's a win-now atmosphere. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think they can win for a long time because they got the talent there. But right now, it's a win now, and it's a win this year. So if someone, say I'm competing with somebody, they make the team over me. But if they're not succeeding in the big leagues, they don't have time to watch them fail. To whereas a team that might not be winning, they got time to watch them fail because they're not going anywhere, and they're not going to spend extra money on someone else. So if someone's not succeeding and I'm pitching extremely well, there's a lot better chance to get myself up there. Plus, say I'm in Buffalo, pitching extremely well, I have an out clause in my contract. Knowing teams look at that situation and know why I'm not in the big leagues, if I'm pitching for a team that's struggling and I'm not in the big leagues, they start asking why. You know, obviously there's a reason why you're not. If you're pitching for a great team, you're just not getting an opportunity. Like last year, I was pitching in the Dodgers AAA, pitching extremely well. Dodgers are doing well in the big leagues. People know, okay, he's just not getting his chance because guys are pitching really well. So, you know, you get here and, you know, I thought I could have had a really good chance to make the team. Fortunately, it didn't work out. But you take that and you run with it.
So, obviously, I mean, your goal is to get back to the majors. I think that's with everybody here. You know, now that the season's just about to get going and you're probably getting ready to, you know, I guess another 3-4 days in camp and then you're back up north. What's the thing that you're going into the season thinking about the most?
Early strikes, early and often. I need to attack the zone of strikes. I think that was the only thing in camp that I didn't do well. I threw my changeup extremely well. Slider was great, coming along perfectly. Came up with a new curveball. Never had a curveball before. It's going very well. Got a couple really good strikeouts with it. The only negative I think I take away from the camp is throwing early strikes. My velocity was at where I was in the middle of the season last year. So that's great. It's just a matter of pounding the zone of fastballs. If I'm ahead of the count, it's game over. I've always had strikeout stuff. It's a matter of if I'm getting the strikeout counts. So that's really the big thing I'm going to be working on and focusing on, especially early on. If I'm getting ahead of hitters, it's a whole different ballgame for me.
Well, I don't want to take any more time, but thanks a lot, David Aardsma. Thanks for joining us, and have a great season, and hopefully we'll see you both in Buffalo red, white, and sometimes blue, and Toronto Blue Jays blue as well.
No, absolutely. No, thank you. Sorry, some long-winded answers, but I appreciate it.
That's it for episode number 50 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank David Ardsma for joining me. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back soon and go Jays go.